On October 13, 1986, over 25,000 people streamed into BC Place. Expo 86 had just drawn to a close, and over 100,000 items left over from the event went up for purchase in what was referred to as the world's largest garage sale in the world's largest garage. Only 2 days prior, the Indonesian Pavilion had similarly divested itself of a very large collection of items by gifting a full Javanese gamelan to Simon Fraser University. What you are hearing is the sound of that gamelan, Madusari, a collection of over 60 large and small gongs, xylophone-like batalophones, two-headed drums, and stringed instruments made on the island of Java in Indonesia. It had been used in performances every day for over 5 months in Vancouver at the Indonesian Pavilion by some of Indonesia's most respected musicians, and it was suspected that they would not be brought back there at Expo's conclusion. Aware that this might be the case, the Vancouver-based composer, community organizer, and SFU professor Martin Bartlett spent the year leveraging every force at his disposal to ensure that the gamelan would be given a home in Vancouver. The process was by no means straightforward and adds interesting complexity to our understanding of the ways in which artists, institutions, and governments interacted around Expo 86. But first, a little background. Expo can be seen as representative of a shift that had been taking place throughout the 1980s, from Vancouver being a city focused on a resource extraction-based economy to becoming a Pacific Rim-oriented hub of global finance and investment. Expo itself was extremely contentious, as British Columbia had been in a deep recession, and the Conservative Premier Bill Bennett's Social Credit Party had implemented many cuts to spending, which contrasted sharply against Expo's $1.5 billion price tag. The event also took place around False Creek, which was and still is adjacent to historically low-income neighborhoods. This proximity contributed to one of the more significant and polarizing immediate outcomes of Expo, which was the forced eviction of low-income tenants from downtown Eastside hotels to make room for tourists. These issues, among many others, would go on to galvanize portions of the arts community in Vancouver and provoke consternation about whether or not to be involved in Expo. Artist Sarah Diamond published an article arguing to boycott the event, or at the very least not cross picket lines, and find ways to express opposition from within. The punk band DOA protested by contributing their song Billy and the So-Creds to a compilation album titled Expo Hurts Everyone, and they performed alongside Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie at Stanley Park, all of which raised funds for Vancouverites displaced by Expo. And going even further, local alternative band Slow's now legendary Expo performance was shut down within minutes after their singer walked onto stage chanting Sieg Heil Bill Bennett and exposing his butt to the crowd. And of course, there were also many other musicians and artists who chose to participate in Expo. Thousands of performances of all sorts took place over its five-month run. The story of the gamelan indicates yet another way that artists interacted with Expo. Though it seems that Bartlett also deeply disliked the event, he certainly took advantage of its presence in Vancouver. Knowing that the gamelan could be up for grabs, he worked outside of Expo to convince the officials at the Indonesian Pavilion that Vancouver was the best home for the instruments. And he did this by planning events for the musicians from the Indonesian Pavilion, by organizing gamelan workshops independent of Expo, and by leveraging pre-existing political and economic connections between Simon Fraser University and Indonesia. One of the most important of these efforts was a multi-week intensive gamelan workshop, which took place in the summer of 1986 and which featured the teachers Iwayan and Ninanik Wenton, alongside the renowned musician K.R.T. Wasidodipuro, also known as Pak Chokro. The Summer Institute took place at SFU and offered courses in Balinese and Javanese music and dance to local participants. This demonstrated that there was both community and institutional support for the instruments in Vancouver, but it also very strategically wove SFU and the wider community into the lives of Indonesian officials and musicians. The opening ceremony for the event included both local and foreign dignitaries, and after the workshops concluded, a few participants even continued working on music with assistance from musicians from the Indonesian Pavilion. Further in these efforts, Bartlett organized a late-night wayang performance at the Western Front, a local artist-run center that he had helped found. Wayang is a form of Javanese shadow play which usually lasts all night, but had been truncated when performed at Expo. The exhibition at the Western Front was arranged outside the auspices of Expo, but with the collaboration of the Indonesian Pavilion, and lasted through the night. The performance further demonstrated Vancouver's suitability as a home for the gamelan, and was the most successful of a number of efforts Bartlett made to find performance opportunities for the artists at the Expo Pavilion. Finally, Bartlett worked to channel the political and economic forces flowing behind the scenes at Expo and SFU. The university had received funding from the Canadian government to help build Indonesia's post-secondary school system, and he certainly leveraged this connection. Bartlett would ask colleagues traveling to Indonesia for this purpose to mention the Summer Institute to high-level officials, and he would constantly stress in communications with both Indonesian and university officials how cultural connections such as the gamelan workshops would work to further strengthen the ties that bound the two parties, ties that certainly involved a lot of money and prestige. As Expo was concluding, the Javanese gamelan ended up being gifted to SFU, while the pavilion's other gamelan from Bali went to the University of Montreal. The event at which the gamelan was officially given to the university was described by Bartlett as follows. On Tuesday, there was a call from the Indonesian pavilion at Expo. Would I come down immediately? When I got there, it was to be told that they had decided to give SFU the Javanese gamelan, a beautiful set of 60 or more instruments in ornately carved and gilded wooden frames, a score indeed. Saturday there was a ceremony at the pavilion. The ambassador, Indonesian, came, and there was lots of groveling and handshaking as the gamelan was officially presented. I had to write a speech for the ambassador and also one for the president of SFU, then sat back and blended into the furniture as the high panjen drums complimented each other with my words. Such is the life of a courtier. It's important to note that this story as told leaves out some very important actors. Bartlett, of course, was not alone. Many community members also worked hard to help him in this project. Many of those people went on to form an enduring community around the gamelan, three of whom composed the pieces you heard during the course of this recording. Right now, you're hearing an excerpt from Kenneth Newby's Dreams He Is a Ball of Fire or a Hummingbird, Part 1, which was also the first excerpt you heard. Following that was an excerpt of Mark Parlett's Intimate Distance, followed by a section of Lessons of the Garden by Michael O'Neill. All of these pieces come from a CD called New Nectar, released in 2004 by Gamelan Madusari. Thank you to the composers and to Tony Reef at Songlines Records for letting me use these songs. For more information about what the ensemble is up to now, feel free to visit gamelanmadusari.com. My name is Justin DeVries. Thanks for listening.